Guaranteed to be less cheap than Tom Dundon running the Trailblazers, it's the Portland Grand Prix Review on Motorsport 101.
Can't argue with that one, certainly. RJ just stole my intro. We're keeping that. Welcome to episode 678 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Trey Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever. And in the back half of this Dre and RJ doubleheader event, we are talking IndyCar and their Grand Prix of Portland. We're getting into what I like to call the gauntlet. We have six IndyCar races to go, including this one we just had, over the next 5 weeks. It's a quintuple header to close out the 2026 season, an IndyCar race, at least one IndyCar race. We've still got two from Milwaukee at the end of the month. But at least one IndyCar race every week until the first week in September. They're going to start coming in thick and fast to close out the 2026 season. And when we talk about closing out seasons, Alex Palou is here, and Alex Palou has just sent another body blow thundering into the chest of Kyle Kirkwood when it comes to the 2027 title battle, because just when you thought it was getting interesting, Palou goes back-to-back in Nashville and in Portland to take the championship lead up to three digits. And, well, RJ O'Connell, you changed our script and called it Palou Land, and yeah, it's hard to argue against it, really, isn't it?
I had a feeling, right? Because we know Laguna Seca is the best track that Palou has out of the ones remaining, but I was just like, he goes well at Portland, too. He goes really well at Portland, and this could be an absolute hammer blow if he gets it. But Will Power goes well around here. That's Will Power at Penske, right? That's Will Power motivated to prove a point that's way out of Penske. Oh, I had a feeling this was going to happen.
This is, I mean, look, I was a little less optimistic. I had a feeling it was going to be between Power, Lundgaard, and Palou. Like, Power goes well at Portland. He always has. He's won multiple times. He's actually the only multiple-time winner on the grid until this past Sunday. He was the only other multiple-time Portland winner on the grid. Lundgaard has been on a heater on road courses this year. Average finish of 1.5 on road courses so far this season. He's been incredible around them all year. So I thought those guys were going to be in the mix. Nope. Palou not only won this one, he won this one pretty comfortably in the end. We'll break down how it happened, how it played out, and why he's probably now got one hand and at least two fingers on the Aster Cup for the fifth time in 6 years. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the main threat from behind, Felix Rosenqvist, who had a very, very good race weekend, just couldn't quite bring it home in the end. Will Power, maybe the revenge tour actually started a few rounds ago and he's finally figuring it out. Who knows? And we'll talk about Waluigi. No, seriously, that was a thing. That was a big... It's for once the commentary box had an inside joke that landed. You know, it's first time for everything this season. We'll talk a little bit about that in the next 45 minutes or so. Until then, let's get the housekeeping out of the way. Places you can find us real quick are on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And if you want to catch highlights of the videos that we make from the show and from us in general, you can do so on TikTok and Instagram at Motorsport101Pod. Check us out over there. If you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon as well. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Jason is doing so right now. Much appreciated, good sir. And of course, you can check out all of those details on our website, motorsport101.com. Right, without further ado, let's get into round 13 of the 2026 IndyCar Series, the Grand Prix of Portland.
Oh man, Alex Palou didn't get pole position in Portland. Like it matters at this point. Look, Felix Rosenqvist was the pole sitter by just 19 milliseconds, and he tried to take the early advantage on his hard tires after an early caution landed for Graham Rahal being in the wall. Now, Marcus Ericsson jumped ahead of Alex Palou using the soft tires, but botched his early stops out lap with a major mistake at turn one. Can't do that. Palou then jumped the pair of them on his own in lap and took lead. He worked up a 7-second lead on his mandatory stint on the sticker red Firestone NWO Wolfpack tires. By the end of the second stint, Palou will be caught up in traffic from Graham Rahal and Pato O'Ward, fighting to stay on the lead lap. Rosenqvist used his option tires to counterattack in the third stint, but he too would be caught in traffic as Dre, if you were to guess that anybody was going to be the traffic that a front runner would catch on an IndyCar road or street course race, who do you think that traffic would be?
Stingray Rob.
Yeah, get the confetti can, let's go! It's Stingray Rob holding up Rosenqvist at a critical juncture in the race. Palou did survive the onslaught, though. He bolted on the scuffed, hard black tires and cruised to his sixth win of the season ahead of Felix Rosenqvist. And Will Power, aforementioned pick to click, got back on the podium in third. Kyle Kirkwood finished down in fifth. David Malukas only 12th, and with that, Alex Palou extends his championship lead to 110 points with only 5 races remaining this season. Should be 4. But nonetheless, 110 points between Palou and Kirkwood, 118 points between Palou and Malukas. Oh, by the way, Palou matches Gordon Johncock with his 25th career American Open Wheel Racing victory, and he becomes just the third driver in the history of major American open wheel racing, you have back-to-back seasons with 6 wins or more. The others, Mario Andretti in 1966 and 1967, and Sebastian Bourdais in 2004, 2005, 2006, and 2007. One other thing we could match Bourdais on, only the second driver to win 4 straight national championships. I mean, the notes are just he just keeps getting away with it, got Jeff.
I mean, what else do you want me to say? He just keeps getting away with it. I mean, I don't want, because the thing is, right, and this is going to be weird to say, so forgive me. I actually feel kind of bad for Palou in the sense of, the kickback against his success is now so strong that the man's doing nothing wrong. And I've said this 100 times. He's a wonderful ambassador for IndyCar. He's a fantastic figurehead to have at the front of the series. He's done a fantastic job on and off the track. You know, the people were like, it says a lot when all of his rivals can't say a single bad word about him in the sense of, he's friendly, he's kind, he'll race you hard, but he'll always race you fair. You know, no one can say a bad word about him. Pato O'Ward is probably the only exception to that, and he's just taking the piss like he always does. You know, everybody likes him. The fans within IndyCar, the hardcores, love him. He's super popular. He signs every autograph, takes every selfie. The press love him because he gives you honest answers. And he asks about them. He genuinely cares about the small IndyCar circle it is. And yet there's fans everywhere shitting on him every time he takes a win. Because, oh, it's boring. It's terrible. What's he doing? I don't like it. You know? Shut up. We're watching greatness. Okay? I'm watching a genius at work. Okay? This is one of the most loaded IndyCar fields I can remember. And he's crushing them into pillars of salt. Week in, week out. This was a flawless performance. Like, it was a very typical Palou win in that didn't necessarily start from pole. Actually dropped to third for a little minute as well because Ericsson got him on the. He had one caution the whole race. It was Graham Rahal briefly putting his car in the barrier early doors. You know, a few guys tried to switch to a 4-stopper. Didn't quite work out in the end. But Palou drops to third, and then we all know what Palou's going to do. Save the extra fuel, sit, right, you know, behind Eriksen and Rosenqvist, who had a great lead out, was a good opening stint, saves the extra two laps of fuel, buries his in lap, 10 crew stop is on the money, leapfrogs both Eriksen and Rosenqvist out of the pits, didn't look back, leads 60 out of the last 80 laps.
The Alex Palou in lap is one of the most dangerous weapons in all of motorsport.
It's because the thing is, right, especially now with these new rules in IndyCar that you now have to have one mandatory stick a red and one mandatory stick a black stint on road courses. You know, it's now two mandatory soft on street tracks. Because of that, a lot more of these IndyCar races are strategy races where you're looking for over or undercuts to make certain situations work. Alex Palou is the best in and out lapper I've ever seen in IndyCar.
You watched a lot of Sebastian Vettel.
That's my point. I loved Seb, and Seb was one of the greatest one-lap rippers you will ever see, in the sense of opening laps of Grand Prix, his confidence on cold tyres was off the charts. How many times did Sebastian Vettel lead through lap one and he'd be a second and a half clear at the end of lap one?
His last win was all down to nailing the best in-lap, out-lap combination he could get to jump ahead of Charles Leclerc.
Yeah. That's the point. Like Seb was a genius at knowing when to extract the full amount of his pace at the right time. Alex Palou is even better than that, because it's almost like a metronome when you know what's about to happen. Like, bless him, and I'm going to name him here on our Discord server, Danny Brennan, who's a good friend of ours, mentioned on Monday, it's like, well, you know, you can't let Alex Palou have clean air. You've got to match him stride for stride. And, you know, you just got to save fuel. But the point, Danny, is that no one can save fuel in this field as well as Alex Palou. No one can have an in-lap or an out-lap as good as Alex Palou. So if a race becomes a strategy race, Palou is going to beat you. It's that simple. Because what happened at the start of this race? Rosenqvist and Eriksen have to come in early. They're not as good on their tyres and not as good on fuel. They have to come in. Eriksen has been particularly because he had a soft stint to start the race, so he had to come in early. Palou extends. Leapfrogs the pair of them coming out of the pits. Never loses the lead again. It's classic Palou, because then Palou went to the sticker reds for his second stint and he rips out a 7-second lead. So he's now in full control of the race. He can afford to lose time in traffic. He can afford to give up time on the harder compound tyre. Oh, which, by the way, Alex Palou is a magician on harder compounds.
Alex Palou on the prime compound is one of the deadliest weapons in all of motorsport. How many times have we said it?
Yeah.
How many times have we said it this year? Like, to Brent's point, yeah, it's just like, you know, it's like in baseball when everybody says, yeah, if you hit 40 home runs a year, every year, for 20 consecutive years without letting up, you might just be able to set the all-time career home runs record, which, of course, is 762 set by Barry Bonds. It's just that easy.
Yeah. Jason says, black tire is Palou's Exodia. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Like, the final stint of that race is that Rosenqvist and Palou are both on the black tires at the end. And Rosenqvist got real close to Palou at the end of the third stint of that race because he saved his soft tire for the third stint. And then because when Palou got caught in traffic, he lost the vast majority of that 7-second advantage he'd built up. And what happens? Palou put 6 seconds on the field's head again at the end. It just didn't matter. Like, because on black tires in open air, no one can touch Palou. He's invincible. You can't touch him when he's in that kind of mood. So to say, just match him on an in and out lap strategy, it's impossible.
I will say, though, I do love Alex Palou, and this is not me turning. It can't just be all him winning this way, right? It can't just all be outlap, midlap mastery. It can't just all be black starts. It mix in a little bit of, I don't know, start your final stint fourth, stick on the red sticker tires, and then just gun him down one at a time and make like some crazy pass for the lead in the final lap. Mix in a little bit of that there. I think that might raise the spirits of the crowd.
Yeah, look, I've always said, us Brits have a problem with dominance. The Americans really have a problem with sporting dominance.
Yeah, we were spoiled with 20 winners in a season every year in NASCAR in the early 2000s.
Yeah, like I get it. Like, look, and what have I always said on this show? Sports fandom is built on a healthy bed of hatred. And when their unpredictable IndyCar series has gone the way it's gone for the last half decade, because we're now looking at Alex Palou, very, you know, very strong odds-on favorite to win his fifth Aster Cup in 6 years.
Clinch at that race.
He could clinch at the Freedom 250. It's not impossible. It would take some effort, but he could clinch at the Freedom 250 in 2 weeks' time. We've got two street tracks coming up, and it's not like, and Palou is extremely strong there, let's not forget.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite Kirkwood levels, but he's top three in every discipline in this series now, effectively. So there's every chance. No, like, look, a part of me as a sports fan does wish it was a little bit more interesting sometimes. Of course I do. But if you're booing the man for doing his job properly, then you're the problem, you know? If you're digging that hard for a reason to dislike him, besides he's winning all the time, then I'm sorry, that's just how this sport goes sometimes. Like, we are spoilt as fans of this series. We were spoilt that for a good while it was anyone's game on the day. That doesn't normally happen in motorsport. Maybe in endurance racing, because there's more grounds for funky shit to happen over an extended amount of time. But, like, for IndyCar, when I first started becoming a fan of the series 10 years ago, 8 to 10 winners a year was pretty common.
Uh-huh.
Now we're more down to 5 or 6 because of Palou, because Palou has had such a grip on the series for the last half decade. He's single-handedly bringing down the amount of different winners we're getting in a season, because, as mentioned, Palou won 8 times last year. He's won 6 times this year. Like, he had 5 in 2023 when he had his other ridiculously dominant season. And, oh, by the way, forgot to mention something that's not been talked about as much. He's become IndyCar's best qualifier as well. His average start this season is 3.
Mm-hmm. Chewy. How do you stop that?
You don't. Like, his average start is 3.5 points better than anybody else. The only other man that's even in the same ballpark is Pato O'Ward. His average start this year is 6.6. Like, it is... Like, Palou has no weakness in his game. None. Like, what possible weakness could be pointed out besides contract re-signings at this point?
It's short ovals, and the weaknesses, as I've said before... His short oval, his super speedway attribute rating is like high 80s, low 90s instead of high 90s. If we were doing this in the IndyCar video game, which I'm sure is coming out anytime soon. You know what else doesn't help? This feeling of monotony that some people are feeling as Palou keeps continuing to win is that other teams and other competitors have chances, and then Will Power and Ron Rozewski just can't get on the same page when it comes to when do we come in for our final stop.
Yeah, it turns out at the end of the, because this was a three-stop race, at the end, just before that third and final stop, Ron Rozewski is talking to Will on the radio, and I didn't notice about IndyCar radios until this race. If someone's talking, the person that's talking can't hear them. It's effectively like a one-way radio, even though it's technically two. It kind of acts like a one-way radio. So Ron was talking to Will about other stuff, and then when he says, pit this lap, Will doesn't hear it on the stop, on the lap they wanted to come in and stop for his last stop, which was going to put him on his set of mandatory sticker reds. Will had saved his step for the last into the race. But he had to go an extra lap, and then on that extra lap, he loses 3 seconds behind Stingray Rob in traffic, and he can't pass him. Portland's not a very pass-friendly circuit. It's small, yeah. It's tight, it's technical. There isn't really very many gimme spots to pass somebody. Will loses 3 seconds. He comes out of the pits behind Felix Rosenquist again when he had a decent chance of jumping him in pit road. He's stuck behind Felix, and then he hasn't got enough of a delta and pace difference to pass Rosenquist. Will eventually gives up, and he completely wastes that final stint on the sticker reds and has to settle for third. That was the one interesting part of that potential finish. Will, with a 20-lap blitz on the reds, maybe tries to gun down Pelot. But another goof from the 26 crew has left Power to settle for third.
It's not even a botched tire change or a fuel nozzle getting stuck in the car. Like, that's different.
This is a new one. It's a radio miscommunication. Like, damn, that's what... Was that the free space on the bingo card? Like, shit.
Don't you always hear the boo-doo-doo-doo chime that comes in on the radio letting you know somebody's talking?
It was a small tangent. I didn't put this in the set note as well. Like, that is the most annoying fucking sound in motorsport broadcasting right now, is their fucking airport tannoy style announcement when someone's about to talk on the radio. And did you see what we had during qualifying this weekend, RJ? We had portals for qualifying sector times now. Whole-ass VR, like, superimposed, like, big portals. It was like playing Wipeout from, like, the 90s, where it's like, as you drive past on the lap or while they're on board, a superimposed gate is on the screen saying what time that sector was, and then it would say how far off you were in terms of a split on top of the aero screen. You guys barely have a working timing tower most weekends. And now you're trying to basically be Mr. 90s futuristic racing series via a superimposed portal that's laggy, slow, and doesn't add anything to the broadcast. Is IMS that out of touch? Because they're producing
I know Fox Sports might be. Look, let's talk about the antithesis of this, because this was not looking like a great week for Christian Lundgaard. Somehow he salvaged ninth after starting last due to a hybrid failure in qualifying. And on top of that as well, and I want to roll this in as well, Rinus VK. Well, we can't call him Rinus VK. He's Waluigi now, because
apparently
it's Portland. It's a West Coast race. Convenience store AMPM is sponsoring his car for the weekend. You know AMPM, their color scheme is purple and gold. What are those the colors that remind you of? Why, that would be the purple and yellow of Waluigi. Somebody points that out, and by Sunday, he's got a Waluigi cap with the upside down L that kind of looks like an art. I love that David Malukas is just like, yeah, I just hope Nintendo doesn't sue us. he knows ball
that's
by
great. That's a great but, line. Like
yeah, but Rinus, out of that, Waluigi finishes fourth, Lundgaard finishes ninth, and here we are again with the two most coveted drivers of the silly season matching each other with great performances on a weekend where they could really use them.
It is Rinus VK's third, fourth place finish in the last 5 rounds. Like, Junkos has never had it this good. He's top 10 in points in a Junkos. And look, they've had Cannamilo in that car, and Cannamilo was a damn good Formula One level prospect. Like, legit, you could have put Cannam in an F1 car, and no one would have complained. And Rinus VK has been tremendous this season. I feel like a lot of it is, and I feel bad for Arenas because I think some of it is brought up in bad faith because of Christian Lingard. In a vacuum, in his own right, Arenas VK has been tremendous this season. It deserves a lot of flowers. This is by a country mile his best season in IndyCar. And I think it's opened a lot of people's eyes to the fact that he has been the midfield scrapper of IndyCar for a good half decade now. And
what about this? He's performing at the level that we hadn't really seen out of him at ECR since about... We got the win in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
He had a podium at Barber in 22, and then he has the second in Toronto. And for the last couple of years at ECR, he just kind of looked lost. It looked like, I always said, he was at risk of being the lost man of that generation that is below Award, Colton Herta. Remember Colton Herta when he was there? Mm. That was great. And Arenas VK always had that potential to stick with them, but as time went on, he just slipped further and further away. He's never finished in the top 10 in the standings, and I know he's still got 5 races to go. Like, this could be a new high mark for him.
There's some good names around him on that table. Will Power is directly behind him. You know, Scott Dixon is directly behind him. Graham Rahal is directly behind him. These are good names. Like, Graham Rahal, low-key, still had a very good season this year, given the RLL and all the jokes. He still has 3 podium finishes this year. You can't scoff at that.
He's had a bit of cold water dumped on his head since that little oopsie-daisy at Road America.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean... I've said it on Astray on the website, and I'll say it again here. The bespoke thing for Chip Ganassi to do would be to hire both these young men, quite frankly. And look, Kiffin Simpson has taken another small leap forward. I've got to give Kiffin his due. He's getting a little bit better every year. He's been an IndyCar. He's 14th in points right now. He finished top 10 this weekend, was in 10th. He's a 6th top 10 of the year. By the way, Scott Dixon only has 5. This season. Like, Kiffin's had more top 10s than Scott Dixon this year, which is worth pointing out.
I know Kiffin Simpson leaving Ganassi would not be ideal for him, but you got to think that, like, if anybody that's, like, positional, like, be able to cushion the blow, like, an RLL would love to have that kind of disposable income.
Oh, absolutely. Maybe
an MSR would like to have that disposable income. You're kidding me? Because now it seems like Kyle Collette is off the table. That was rumored like for a little bit. Takano Shinota not coming until 2028. Mm-hmm. It's either going to be one of either VK or Lundgaard or Kiffin Simpson or, I don't know, Mick Schumacher. Fuck it.
I mean, look, Pruitt released his latest silly season article a couple of days before the race weekend started, and the big drawing points to take from that were apparently Lundgaard is going to the number 9 car. It's pending, like, approval from PNC Bank, which is Dixon's sponsor. If they sign off on it, it'll be formally announced probably at the end of the season. Yeah, like, a lot of people. And the thing is, right, and I'm calling out Townsend Bell directly here because this was some horse shit, but the man said during Sunday warm-up that Christian Lingard will never be an elite driver in IndyCar because he's not from the United States. Which might be the dumbest motherfucking thing I've ever heard from a motorsport commentator, ever. And I've listened to Tom Brooks' dad jokes in Formula E.
Listen to a lot of Townsend Bell. As Jason points out in our chat, who's the current points leader?
Alex Palou, the man who's had a vice grip on the series for the last half decade. Spaniard Alex Palou. Like, there's so many things wrong with that statement. One, it's casually xenophobic because that means, oh, the United States is better than everybody else, so therefore the US is the, you know, is better than everybody else. Okay,
brother, we went through an entire decade in, like, the 2000s of wondering, well, who the hell is going to be the next one American prolific open wheel racer? It's like, it's Sam Hornish and AJ Allmendinger. And what happened to both of them? They went to fucking NASCAR. Right? Otherwise, that decade is dominated by Brazilian Gilda Ferrin, Brazilian Elio Castroneves, Brazilian Cristiano D'Amata, New Zealander Scott Dixon, and Frenchman Sebastian Bourdais, with a little bit of Scotsman Dario Franchitti added on top. And, oh, by the way, Englishman Dan Weldon, rest in peace, big fella.
Indeed.
And Brazilian and Tony Kanaan won a title in there, too.
And it's not like we've not had prevalent Americans in the series in recent times. I've yearned for the return of late 2010s Alex Rossi, which was a fine wine bottle to have on the shelf. Joseph Newgarden went on a half-decade tear in IndyCar where he treated runner-up in the championship like the floor and then won two 500s for shits and giggles afterwards. You know, David Malukas is third in points right now. You've actually got a young American superstar, the one you always wanted right now in IndyCar. Malukas has ticked every box you could ask for him. Now he's in a big boy seat. Yes, I know he's half Lithuanian and all that. Still, he classed himself as an American. You've got your homegrown talent that you've always wanted. Fuck Santino. My point I'm getting at here is that not only is it stupid to say that Lundgaard's not elite because he's not American, Lundgaard is elite right now! He's been top five in points for the last 2 years! What series have you been watching?
25th to 9th at a place where it's inherently tough to pass. Look, there have been some pretty incredible comeback performances in Portland, but let's be real, sometimes that comes down to strategy.
What is Townsend Bell's major malfunction?
I've had this theory. Remember when Paul Tracy stepped away from the commentary box? Now, when it was PT and Bell, Townsend Bell would always have to be the straight man keeping Paul Tracy in line. There's a different dynamic now with Bell and Hinch, and I just wonder, has a bit of that Paul Tracy seeped its way into Townsend Bell in new rotation?
I think it's valid, and yes, I think you're absolutely right. Christian Lundgaard had a brilliant drive to come back to ninth. He had to carve through that field early on. It frustrates me because the thing is, right, between you and me in the chat, I want to like that commentary booth. I really do. There is a genuine charisma about Will Buxton that I've always admired about him. And he, say what you will about Will, he will always give it both barrels. He's never lacked enthusiasm, and that is half the battle when it comes to appealing to people from a motorsport standpoint. The problem I have with the current box is, and I've mentioned this in previous shows, Will Buxton tries too hard. He's tried too hard for a little while, and he's determined to make things more dramatic than they actually are. Felix Rosenqvist has taken the gap down from 2.2 to 1.9 seconds. What could happen next? Tune in after the break. And, you know,
very Crofty of him.
It's nonsense. Like, and I'll give Crofty this. Crofty, I have my own set of problems. He makes a lot of mistakes on the air, but he typically gauges the big moments bang on.
Yeah.
And that's what makes Crofty tolerable. Townsend Bell just says shit at this point. He's the definition of just saying shit. And you know, I feel so bad for James Hinchcliffe because you listen to James on F1 TV, if you're lucky enough to listen to F1 TV, the growth he's had as a broadcaster has been immense. He can now anchor Formula One weekends, which is an incredibly difficult thing to do. He can anchor, like Laura Winter has done a tremendous job of doing and making F1 TV her own in recent years. I love Laura. She's fantastic. But James can now step into that role so Laura doesn't have to do every race weekend. She's now going off doing WEC for TNT Sports now part-time as well. Hinch can anchor a weekend. He can be an educated pundit. He's driven an F1 car a little bit now, but also he does his homework. He does his research. If you want to go back on F1 TV and catch the preview for the Hungarian Grand Prix, he runs off the most perfect grid walk I've ever heard. He's going through the grid, talking about every single car, talking about their race weekend, interlacing quotes. verbatim facts about their weekend so far. It's the perfect soundtrack for what you're about to sit down and watch. And I remember because David Hobbs said, quote, he'd never seen anything like it in 41 years of being a broadcaster. When David Hobbs is gassing you up, he's like, yeah, this is the real fucking deal.
Yeah.
And Hinch
Also, by the way, the anecdote that I was going to bring up that I brought up a couple times, but it bears repeating, he was calling champ car races for Eurosport as a teenager when he was still climbing the American open wheel racing ladder.
Yeah.
This was always going to be one of his paths. It was either going to be driving cars or broadcasting, and it turns out he got to do both.
Yeah, he's always said if he was never a race car driver, he wanted to be a broadcast journalist. A man after my own heart, because that's what my degree was in, broadcast journalism. So I'll always have a deep admirance of James Hinchcliffe, because he's been able to basically live my dream to a degree. And on IndyCar, he's wasted, because he just spends most of his time correcting Townsend and Will, who just have hyperbole syndrome, where they've got to make everything seem overdramatic when the dose, the voice of reason has to be Hinch. Every single time I watch an IndyCar broadcast, it's so annoying. Like, Hinch has got so much charisma and skill, he doesn't need to be the well-actually guy. But he has to be, because he's the only sincere broadcaster out of the three of them. I've tangented, and I'm sorry, but I had to get that off my chest because I wrote about it in my DRR, and I had to talk about it here because it winds me up so much, because I want to like Will so bad, but he makes it really hard for me.
and the tangent was about Townsend, and the tangent was about Christian Lundgaard, who was, I told you everybody was overthinking it. He was the latest reportings from my colleagues are correct, he's gonna get the 9 car anyway. We just spent an entire month overthinking this crazy.
And to be fair, it's not even, like, I don't even necessarily think it's overthinking, because every time this battle's been talked about for this seat, what has it always been? Gassing up Rinus VK, which is not entirely undeserved. He's been brilliant this season, and I wouldn't hate it if he got the number 9 seat, because he's been brilliant this year, and I've been saying for years, he deserves a top-flight opportunity with a premier team. Would have no issue with that whatsoever. But every time this debate comes up, and I think you've noticed this too, RJ, it's like they're coming out with little asterisks about Christian Lundgaard. Oh, the oval form's not as good. Oh, he's difficult to work with. Oh, he's not
the only one that thinks that Christian Lundgaard's oval form is not a disaster.
Right. It's midfield. Midfield is fine. It's just, it hurts more because McLaren have made it so blatantly obvious they want the Triple Crown, and they've missed the mark with Pato Award 4 times now. 6, really, to be honest. But, you know, it's... That's the problem.
That could boil down to a lot of just, like, Aero McLaren IndyCar just frustrates us as a whole.
Yeah, because they should be better than what they are.
Exactly. How many years have we been saying this through? How many managerial changes, right? It's like, yeah, Tony Kanaan could fuck up next season, and he could get fired. Ryan Hunter-Reay could take over his job. And then what is that going to change when they are still the distant third or fourth best team in the IndyCar series? Not a whole lot.
Like I said, it's one of those ones where I'm now genuinely concerned for McLaren next year, because their frontline team is Pato Award, who looks like he's actually regressed a little bit this year, in my opinion. I don't think he's been the number 2 guy in the series that he was blatantly last year. I think he's actually regressed a little bit by comparison.
Spent the points now. He's got to win, but he's also finished outside the top 10 in 3 of the last 5 races. He's given up the F1 testing because, from what I've been told, it's just a matter of, like, he couldn't be bothered with it. Christian Lundgaard and Nolan Siegel are leaving. You're getting Scott Dixon and Felix Rosenquist, who are still 2 excellent drivers, but, like, you're not getting Scott Dixon at the peak of his powers, and you better hope you didn't mess this up with Rosenquist like you did the last time you had him.
There's a lot of ways this can go wrong. In the sense of, like, whisper it quietly Father Time might finally be winning the battle with Scott Dixon. And he's Max about to Kellerman go
to... is coming up with his hand raised right up to about eye level, proclaiming that Scott Dixon is going to be a bum in short order.
Yeah, it's like... we took this out yesterday. This is the worst run of Scott Dixon's IndyCar career.
He hasn't finished in the top 10 since the Grand Prix at Indy.
Seven rounds in a row without a top 10. He's never had that in the 24 years he's been in top flight North American single-seater racing. He's never gone seven rounds in a row without a top 10 finish. This is the worst patch of Dixon's career. And he's going to McLaren, a brand new team, where we've seen Will Power struggle to adapt to a brand new team. And he's entering his age 47 season.
I want to see him get at least one more of the way out of Ganassi, like, no matter what. But
well, the single-season win streak's in jeopardy.
Yeah.
21 years in a row with at least one win. Yeah, yeah, 21 years in a row.
Nobody's going to get another chance to match that.
No, like, that is probably an unassailable record to have 21 years in a row with at least one win. It's not looking great for Dixon. The streak might end this season. It's not looking great because Dixon's not looked like winning a race at all this year. And like he's had a couple of podiums, but it's not like the Dixon way. He's going to pop up out of nowhere.
He'll always have the Indy 500 rain delay.
Yeah, and that was as near as he got. Emma Davis Dixon doing a rain dance and getting the pancake cooker ready. I mean, it's... And then you got Felix Rosenqvist, who was with your team previously, and you fired him. Because you didn't think he was good enough.
But now that he's won an Indianapolis 500, it's just like, ooh, fills you up, baby. Speaking of this season, I found it crazy that Alex Palou, as dominant as he was last year, threatening the single season wins record last year, his championship lead this year with five races to go is larger than it was last year. It's 110 points versus, I believe, 95 at this time last year.
It was 93 this time last year. One Mark Marquez. I was telling Max this in our Discord server. I think it's because Alex did a lot of his damage in the back end of last year, where he was super strong at the end and Kirkwood's season tailed off quite quickly. Pato came in out of nowhere by getting a couple of late wins and the whole balance of like the top five kind of shifted towards the end of last year where Dixon suddenly got in there. Lundgaard had a bit of a falter towards the end. Pato got good. Kirkwood kind of regressed a little bit. And I think the point lead just exploded down the back end. This year is kind of weird in that Kirkwood's been, I think, Palou's number one threat for pretty much all of this season. Malukas has kind of hovered around that kind of range, occasionally like been above it, slightly below it most of the year. But, and I've made this point many a time, a bad day for Polo is him finishing in the top five. A bad day for David Malukas, he's out of the top 10. And that's the problem. The floor on Polo is so untouchable that all it takes is Polo getting a couple of big wins. If you're not following him home, you're in big trouble because he will just punch you in the gut out of nowhere. Nashville was the real gut punch because no one thought Palou was going to win in Nashville until he did. And what you forget about Nashville is that all of his major rivals had a bad day. You look at Nashville's results one more time and the people directly below him in the championship, Kirkwood was 10th. Malukas was on the podium, not so bad. Lundgaard was 16th. Pato O'Ward was 7th. And I've said it before as well, Gateway, that was the other really bad Palou round because that was when he ran out of fuel coming into pit road and he lost two laps, right? Yeah. Ended up P17 that day. His rivals didn't punish him. Kirkwood was 6th. Yeah. Malukas was 7th.
Damage. Joseph Newgarden on one good foot who nobody fancies as a title contender anymore.
Well, He's not been for the last 3 years. What do you want me to tell you? It's you know.
I'm making your point. It's just like, yeah, like the guys you didn't expect to be 1, 2, and 3 in this race end up being 1, 2 in the race at a time where all the guys like Palou, like Kirkwood and Lucas, etc., really could use that W to get more ground.
Yep. They really could have done something to get there, but yeah, it's when Palou has a really bad day, he's not been punished effectively, and when everybody else has had a mediocre day, Palou punches them in the face with a roundhouse kick. Yeah, he can do that. He can punch you with a kick because he's that talented. Yeah, and that's what's happened. These last two races have been gut punches because Malukas has wavered in form a little bit, and Kirkwood's regressed to where he's now. I mean, he was fifth this race in Portland, which is not a terrible day by any stretch of the imagination. He had a slow puncher during one of his stints in that race that ultimately didn't hurt him too badly, but he was a long P5 away. Malukas had an engine penalty for this round anyway because he had unapproved engine. He had a sixth place grid penalty for that race. He ended up 12th because Malukas wasn't really at the races on this occasion. And what's happened? Palou's won both those rounds. Punch to the gut. And all of a sudden, two rounds ago, when his gap was, I want to say 60 points, it's now 110. And now he's got two weekends in hand with five races to go. And he's got Laguna Seca in the back as a break glass in case of emergency at the end, just in case.
Yeah, Palou was never a race winner at the old Toronto Exhibition Place circuit. But he did reasonably well without winning a race. Markham is different, obviously. And by the way, this weekend, I don't know if it's just you, Trey, but I don't think there's enough teams embracing the Canadian spirit. There's got to be more teams that have got to run some combination of Canadian red and white and incorporate Maple Leaf liveries into their paint scheme this weekend. I don't know about you, but regardless, it's going to be something different. And then, of course, there's that other race happening the week after that, which I'm so glad I've got outstanding work commitments that weekend.
Fair. Look, at least we have Felix Rosenquist's SiriusXM car with a Canadian Maple Leaf flag, a red and white paint scheme, and embracing 3 days' grace. It's something.
Yeah, only Marcus Armstrong and Felix Rosenquist and Graham Rahal have gone down this motif this weekend.
They've got special liveries on the McLarens, but it's not anything Canada-related. It's all just like, oh, we've got more white on our car this weekend. Yay.
Yeah, it's embracing a Canadian business that whatever.
Whatever. No one's here for that.
Whatever.
Yeah, the Streets of Markham is this weekend in IndyCar. We'll obviously be reviewing that next time. That'll be the only podcast we actually do next week because the other big boys are all off. We're still in the middle of F1 summer break for another week or so, and MotoGP now has 2 weeks off before its return to Aragon because their calendar is dumb. So, yes, we'll be doing the Streets of Markham for the first time this weekend. God, if Alex Palou wins this one, he'll probably have a championship points for the Freedom 250.
Remember when I joked all the time about Sebastian Bourdais being the worst driver ever to win 4 straight American national titles?
Yeah. You might actually be right on this one.
It might still hold up now that there's a second member of the club.
I'm sorry, Seb.
You deserved a Le Mans win.
He really did. He still might. You never know. But we'll talk about Markham and whatever goes down there next weekend on Motorsport 101. Until then, I've been on. I was calling myself RJ O'Connell for a second there. Whoops. Can't do that. Andre Harrison. He's been RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for watching and listening. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening. Sayonara.
Ryan Eric King on Twitter. It's his birthday. You cannot incarcerate the man from making the post on social media on his birthday. Enjoy Salt Lake City, brother.
There's nothing wrong with a good pixelated TV view. There's nothing wrong with it as far as I'm concerned. Happy birthday, old friend.